1-1 pitch, swing and a drive. Deep to right field, way up there, way out of here. Goodbye, baseball.
Eight strikeouts for the King tonight and make it 23 consecutive scoreless innings for Felix.
Strike three called on the outside corner, and there it is.
It's time for the Seattle Mariners Baseball Podcast.
Kyle Seager, that just happened. Thank you very much.
Now, here's your host, Gary Hill.
And welcome back to the Seattle Mariners Baseball Podcast. Gary Hill here. Let me ask you this. Do you like home runs? If you do, this podcast is for you because you're going to hear a lot of home runs that the Mariners hit last night, tying a Safeco Field record, swatting six long balls in the ball game. Mariners not messing around offensively. The M's now have won four in a row. They beat the Padres last night 11-4, pounding out 15 hits along the way, really flexing their muscles offensively. And the Mariners take game one of the brief two-game series. They'll go for the mini sweep. They'll look for to break out the mini brooms tonight against San Diego. So you're going to hear some home runs in a second. Also coming up, we'll hear from Rick Riz along with Rick Waits. Just kind of some general pitching tips. I always like hearing from Rick Waits, and he goes kind of inside on mechanics and what it's like dealing with young pitchers and kind of talking about deliveries too, what to look for, and that's good stuff. So that comes up. Also, Logan Morrison, he has a charity event coming up. He'll talk about that as well. And he gave some charity to the fans last night. A little souvenir action again for Logan Morrison, who's been on fire in the month of May especially. And boy, the Mariners just, they play long ball last night. Let's get right to it. Let's just do them all six. All six right in a row. Sit back, relax. Here they are, one after another. Six long balls last night, and it started essentially right away. In the very first inning, Kyle Seager, he got the party started going deep, and this one was a blast.
The 1-0 pitch to Kyle, swinging a drive. Deep to right field, going and going. Goodbye, baseball. Kyle Seager with a three-run line shot home run to right. His fourth home run of the season. And right away, it's the Mariners 4 and the Padres nothing. And we're only in the bottom of the first. Number 4 for Kyle Seager.
The 1-2 pitch to Lomo, swinging a high fly ball right field, carrying back to the wall, and this is gone. Logan Morrison, a two-out, two-strike blast, his sixth of the season, and it's now 5-0 Mariners.
The 2-2 on the way to Zunino, swinging a high fly ball, center field, Almonte looking up, and it is gone.
Mike Zunino leads off the bottom of the sixth inning, his fourth home run of the season, the Mariners' third round tripper tonight. It's 6-0 Mariners.
The 1-2, swing,
high fly ball to deep for the second time. You better believe it, almost to the second tank. Mike Zunino, an absolute shot to left field. He'll touch the ball. Second home run in as many at-bats. That's a two-run bomb from Zunino. It's 9-3 Mariners.
The 1-1. Swing,
and this is teed off to left field. Ruggiano got a lot of this one, and it's into the bullpen. The Mariners' fifth home run of the night. Ruggiano's first homer as a Mariner. And it's 10-3 Mariners.
The 1-0 pitch to Cruz. Swing and a high fly ball. Deep to left center field. There goes number 6. Goodbye, baseball. To the back of the Mariner bullpen. Nelson Cruz with a missile. His 15th home run of the season. And the Mariners are now one home run shy of tying a club record for home runs in a game.
Yeah, they nearly got to the club record. You heard them all. All six home runs. Seager with his fourth of the year. Morrison, his sixth of the year. Zunino, he hit two of them. He's got five on the season now. Ruggiano, number 1 in a Mariners uniform. And Nelson Cruz, 15 big home runs now for Nelson Cruz. As he had another big game in the middle of the order for the M's. 2-for-4, scored 2 runs, drove in 2, batting 349 on the season. having an unbelievable year. He now has 29 RBIs. And it's funny, Nelson Cruz, he led April, co-leader with Hanley Ramirez, 10 home runs in the month of April. So co-leader in the American League. And he's also the co-leader in the American League in the month of May with his teammate, Logan Morrison. Both of them with 5 home runs, along with Stephen Vogt, the 3 leaders in the American League in home runs in the month of May. Morrison just continues to crush the ball. You look back since April 28th, batting .327. He's ripped 3 doubles, 5 homers. He's also walked 7 times along the way. I mean, that is good, good stuff from Logan Morrison. And, of course, Nelson Cruz, he just continues to pepper the ball everywhere. I was looking back, so it ties a Safeco Field record with those 6 home runs. The last time they did it was a while ago. It was against the Kansas City Royals, and Zach Greinke was on the hill, August 27th, 2004. In that ball game, Miguel Olivo, the Mariners catcher then, he hit 2 home runs in the ball game. Jose Lopez hit 1. Iram Bocachica hit 1. One of the best names you can possibly find. Brett Boone and Scott Spezio also went yard in the 6 home run ball game. So Mariners playing some long ball last night, and with the runners on base too, which wasn't bad to see at all. I think Kyle Seager, after the ball game, probably had the line of the night, and he was asked, you know, what's it like with Nelson Cruz hitting in front of you? Great answer.
I mean, he's always on base. So, I mean, if he's not on base, he just hit a homer. So, I mean, he, you know, anytime you get a walk right in front of you, you know, you try to be a little bit more aggressive maybe if he, you know, if he gets at you early. So, I mean, that's just, you know, it works. So it worked out well.
You mentioned the at-bats were better all throughout the lineup. What in specific did you like about that tonight?
You know, we didn't really give away at-bats. You know, even when we, you know, we were able to get a lead, you know, guys were still putting the barrels on balls, and you know, that's contagious. So that stuff is, that's really good for us.
Lloyd McLennan has been preaching patience. We've seen that as a team. I think we've seen that as individuals. What's been working for you?
Personally or the teams? You know, just trying to stay with it. You know, I've felt better the last, you know, week or so. You know, maybe don't get as many hits as you like, but, you know, if you just try to hit the ball hard consistently, you know, it'll end up being there for you.
Also, 4 games in a row for you. Just what do you attribute that role to?
I mean, we think we have a good team. You know, I think I like our team. I like our pitching. I like our, you know, offense. So, I mean, that's, you know, that's baseball. You know, you have your ups and downs, and, you know, you just try to ride the ups a little longer.
You know, Seager, you look at his final line, he goes 1-for-5 with that home run, but he had a laser to first base that was snagged, got robbed of a hit along the way as well. He easily could have been 3-for-5 in that ball game, but he got it all started with that long home run. And speaking of 3 hits, Mike Zunino, 3-for-4, drives in 3, 2 of them long balls, and they were crushed. Here was Mike Zunino after the ball game.
A couple of things. I mean, it's one, sticking to your approach and not getting off that, and two was just some mechanical stuff, and was able to just, I mean, sort of clear the slate, come back in the cage today and go back to some stuff that I was doing, and just sort of slow things down a little bit.
So your approach when you had 2 strikes, what was that on the home runs?
Just shorten up. Yeah, I mean, look for a pitch over the plate and shorten up, and I mean, obviously in those situations you have to look for something out and away and react in, and that's all I was trying to do.
So in the ballgame, every starter had a hit. Seth Smith had 2 of them leading off. Miller, the DH, had 2 doubles, batting 2nd in the order. Cano had a hit. Cruz with 2. Seager, 1. Morrison, 1. Ackley had 1. Zunino, 3. Taylor had 1 as well. So every starter had a hit in the ballgame. Also, Nelson Cruz has homered in 5 straight interleague games, which is a record. And he continues to lead Major League Baseball and home runs. He has 15. There's still only 5 guys in double figures in home runs in all of Major League Baseball. Bryce Harper is 2nd behind Cruz with 12. Frazier from Cincinnati, 11. Teixeira from the Yankees, 11. And then Ramirez, he had those 10 in April. He has not hit one since. So Nelson Cruz, 15 home runs. That leads Major League Baseball. And in terms of RBIs, 29 RBIs, that is 2nd in the American League behind Stephen Vogt of the Athletics. So Nelson Cruz continues to crush it. Now, a few other interesting items from this ballgame. One was Defensively, Dustin Ackley, a great play in center field.
3-1 on the way, swinging a high fly ball center field. Ackley chasing it back to the warning track. Ackley is onto the track. He's down to the knees, and he makes the catch. Dustin Ackley right there at the base of the wall, and he robs Middlebrooks of extra bases.
Great catch in center field by Dustin Ackley, helping out James Paxton. It was a very interesting start for Paxton, one where he got into a couple of big jams, one of them early in the second inning, and boy, did this make a difference to escape what happened.
Here's the stretch, and the 3-2 pitch swung on and popped up. Middle of the diamond, coming in Chris Taylor calling for it. Taylor is there, and he makes the catch in front of the bag at second, and that will finally retire the side. Paxton, a whole lot of wobble, but he did not give in. Three walks, but the Padres lead 3-on.
Yeah, just lost his control. It just went away in the second. Bases loaded, gets out of it. Also faced a bases loaded situation in the fourth.
The 1-2. Strike three called. He gets Barmas looking. With a fastball on the inside corner. Strike three. And that will retire the side. And once again, Paxton walking that tightrope. And once again, he gets to the other side. The Padres leave him loaded.
So James Paxton, it was a pretty interesting start. Kind of uneven, but at the end of the day, zeros on the board. He goes six innings, gives up three hits. No runs. He walked five and fanned five, 109 pitches, but six scoreless innings. He talked about it after the game.
You know, not how you draw it up, but zeros, and we got the win. So got some great defense, and yeah.
How about your effort? Like, were you happy with it? Or?
Well, obviously, I don't want to walk five guys. You know, I was a little bit all over the place and want to clean that up, but I felt like the ball was coming out really good. I had some life. You know, that showed they had trouble squaring balls up, so I just need to bring it in the zone.
So Paxton, 15 innings, 14 earned runs in his first three starts, an 8.40 ERA. Now, five earned runs in his next 24 and two-thirds innings in his four most recent starts, a 1.82 ERA. So his first three starts, 8.40. His next four, 1.82. And again, as he pointed out, you know, it's not exactly what he was looking for with five walks. But, you know, Mariners put runs on the board. He kept the Padres off the board. And the Mariners grabbed the win over the San Diego Padres. They've taken game one of this brief two-game series, trying to sweep aside a team for the second series in a row. They swept aside the A's. They've now won four ball games in a row. So tonight, 7:10, first pitch from Safeco Field. Taijuan Walker will get the start. A little flip by Lloyd McClendon. So Walker will get the call. Roenis Elias is flipped to tomorrow. And partly is something that's impressive about Paxton's start is San Diego is full of right-handed pop. I mean, up and down their order. Upton, we talked about it last night in the podcast. Upton and Camp and every other righty in the lineup, they can be really difficult on left-handers in particular. So the flip is made. Walker is going to go tonight, 1-3, 8.13 ERA, going against James Shields, 4-0, a 4.25 ERA. Mariners, of course, very familiar with James Shields and all of his time in the American League, coming to San Diego in the offseason. Shields, last time out, gave up five earned at Arizona in six innings. The start before that gave up five runs to Colorado. Pretty good April. I mean, pretty lights out in the month of April. Yeah, 2.90 ERA, 2-0 record in the month of April. But May has been a different story so far, a 7.94 ERA. And really, the long ball has been the issue. Four home runs given up last start. Three home runs to start before that. So he's given up seven home runs in the month of May so far. And you know, the way the Mariners struck it last night, we'll see if they can take advantage of that and go yard a few more times tonight against James Shields. So 7:10, first pitch from Safeco Field. Right now, let's hand things over to Shannon Dreher. Really good event coming up involving Logan Morrison, and they're going to talk about it right now.
Logan is involved with a great charity, Cork for a Cause, and it's something near and dear to your heart. Tell us a little bit about what you've got coming up.
Yeah, so it's going to be June 21st. You can buy tickets on corkforacause.com. All the proceeds from the event will go to the Fred Hutch Center for cancer research, and more specifically lung cancer research. My father passed away from lung cancer. He was a non-smoker, so it can affect anyone. Like you said, it's very near and dear to my heart, and it's looking to have a good time and raise some money in the meantime. There'll be silent auction items there. I'm going to have some cleats, game-used cleats, some bats, some balls signed by some of the guys, and multiple players out. Robbie said he's going to come. Try to get Nelson out, Felix, you know, and families are welcome too. So it should be a good time.
And there's wine involved as well.
There's wine. There will be some wine drinking. And there's going to be a bottle with, like, my logo on it, and all the wine bought there will also go, anytime that wine will go to the Fred Hutch Center as well.
Such a fantastic cause. I know you're relatively new to the area, but every time we drive by that building on I-5, you think miracles are happening there. It's so important to get funding.
Yeah, definitely. And I got to visit it last year and see them, you know, basically making cells in a little incubator. It's pretty crazy. And eventually that one day will lead to hopefully a cure. And absolutely, funding is very important for that. It's very expensive. And what happened to my family, I don't want to happen to anybody else. So hopefully we can raise a lot of money doing this and take some steps in the right direction.
How did that kind of shape who you are as a ball player? I know that you went through that while you were playing baseball.
Definitely. In 2010, I was in AAA living with my parents. My dad got diagnosed with lung cancer. The first thing he said, I was in the room, my mom was in the room, first thing he said was, am I going to be around long enough to see my son get his first big league hit? You know, at that time, I was like, I always knew that I meant a lot to him, but, I mean, he got a death sentence, and he's thinking about me. It's pretty cool. And he was the strongest man I ever knew, was always a rock for me. And, you know, I just saw him wither away in front of my face, and it was tough. But baseball made it a lot easier because I knew that's what he wanted me to do. And he did get to be around long enough to watch me play in the big leagues and get my first big league hit. And, you know, every day I step on the field, I think about him. Obviously, when I hit a home run, I do a salute to home plate, but it definitely goes beyond that. And, you know, I'm so thankful for him and the time I had to spend with him.
And I know he'd be so proud. This isn't the first thing you've done. You've been active in different causes for lung cancer and research.
Yeah. Back in with the Marlins, I was doing a camp, Lemo Camp for a Cure. And again, all the proceeds were going to the American Lung Association. You know, being up here and not living in this area in the off season, it's a little harder to do a camp. So I just decided to do this. And last year it was tough to put anything on, just being new to the city and stuff. So, you know, glad to have everybody on board and getting behind it, and should be a great event.
Logan, it just sets a great example. You know, teammates can look to you. You can take the time to do this. They can too, and it can have such an impact.
No doubt, no doubt. You know, when I did the camp, this is my first event like this with wine, but when I did the camp, it was the coolest thing to see these kids having a smile on their face, getting away from reality a little bit, getting to talk to big league baseball players. And I know when I was younger, I would have died to have that. So it's definitely, these events are very special, and I'm glad that I can do a little bit of something, or I can bring a smile to somebody's face just by being there. And yeah, definitely players should definitely look into doing stuff like this for causes that they want to get involved with.
Absolutely. Again, it's coming up June 21st, and folks can find tickets where?
CorkForACause.com. Yep, should be a good time, and well worth it.
All right, and then get a bottle of Lomo too.
Yeah, get a bottle. I mean, not a cup, but a bottle. So should be good wine. Haven't tasted it yet, but they're going to do the unveiling then, so should be good.
And here's Rick Riz along with pitching coach Rick Waits.
When a young pitcher struggles, and this goes for not only young big league pitchers, but any pitcher for that matter, where do you start to try to get things back on track?
I think you start to look at his routine. You know, most pitchers pitch in a major league level on the fifth day rotation or the sixth day. So I start back of saying, okay, what are you doing the day after you pitch? What are you doing the second day, third day, and on to how do you prepare on game day? And we just see if there's any inconsistency in there, because a good routine that's consistent from start to start really builds confidence and even superstition to a certain point. And so that's where I start to look. And then, you know, before I start looking at delivery.
And what's a good delivery? And that changes, I would imagine, from pitcher to pitcher as far as he's comfortable. Taiwan, we saw him pitch last night, kind of walks into that windup. Where do you start with that with a young pitcher?
Well, you know, the main thing to understand is that when you start trying to clone pitchers, I think that's when you get in trouble. There's no one delivery that should be everyone throw it the same. If you did, which one would you pick? Right. You know, would you pitch Pedro Martinez or Felix? Felix? Would you pitch Steve Carlton? I mean, those are all completely.
All three pretty good.
Yeah, all three pretty good. Randy Johnson, they're all different deliveries. And at a good delivery, it allows you to use your legs. So it takes a lot of stress off your arm, and it allows you to be on time for all your pitches out front. That's the timing that you need to find in a good delivery.
Hitters talk about balance at home plate. What about pitchers on the mound as they get into that windup or work from the stretch? How important is that?
Well, I think, you know, there's a couple of things. You know, a lot of people say stay back. Make sure you get back, all these words of back. And to me, it's more of just having that feeling of almost sitting on your back leg a little bit and feeling that when you start to go to the plate, it's almost like the back leg pushing the front side instead of the front side reaching out to the plate. And therefore, you're really protecting the upper body when you do that. And, you know, and then making it simple. And in the case of Taijuan Walker, I think over the last couple of years, he's really come up with a delivery now that's very, very simple. Almost anyone could repeat that, and he repeats it real well right now, and it allows him to get up on top of the ball and drive it down in the zone.
Visiting Rick Waits here on Rick's Tips, and Rick, we always talk about location, location, location. That's the most important thing for any pitcher. Ron Fairley used to joke around, and he was kind of serious when a pitcher was struggling, his fastball was up, he said, well, just aim a little bit lower. But how important is that release point, and how do you get that consistent release point for any pitcher?
Well, I think, first of all, with pitchers is that you have to, when you're with pitchers, you have to figure out what is more important to them. And you would think, okay, getting hitters out, hitting the corners, getting the ball down, but that's not always true. A lot of times, either conscious or subconscious, with a lot of pitchers throwing hard, having a nasty breaking ball, trying to embarrass a hitter with a changeup, in their mind is more important than location. And you have to know that location is the most important thing as a pitcher. When you can put the ball in all four corners of the plate, up and down, in and out, and with several pitches, that's command. And I think the difference is between control and command. Control is strikes. Command is better quality strikes within the strike zone.
A lot of kids, a lot of coaches listening to this program right now. What's the best advice you would give to any kid in Little League, high school, or college at this point in their careers?
You know, command a fastball. And you hear it a lot, but we still are seeing it at the younger ages. Everybody's real concerned about their changeup, their curveball, their slider, their split, their cutter. Cutter's a big pitch lately. And as a young person especially, I would learn to throw that fastball and hit my spots as many times as I possibly could.
Age-old question, Rick. When should a kid start throwing a curveball?
There's no one age, just like there's not one delivery for pitchers. I think it has a lot to do with the strength of the arm, the size of the kid, how athletic he is. I know I didn't start throwing until I was about 13 or 14. I was a skinny kid. Maybe I wasn't strong enough. My dad did not allow me to throw it, and he was my coach through high school. So I don't know if there's an age, but there's a maturity and strength that's involved. And when you start throwing a breaking ball, it should just be one. You know, pick for me would be picking the curveball over the slider.
And the most important thing for any kid, go out there and have fun.
Well, have fun. I mean, I still have fun today as a pitching coach, especially when we pitch well. Yeah. But, you know, a lot of times you do lose that sometimes. And, no, you're thankful to the Lord that you can come to the ballpark and play baseball. And don't ever lose that.
Now the windup and the 3-1 pitch on the way. Swing and a drive deep to right field. Swisher doesn't even turn around. It's in the third deck. Holy smokes. A towering home run by Russell the Muscle Branyan. Make it the fourth deck in right field. Unbelievable. Russell Branyan's 19th home run of the year, and he tried to hit that one to Manhattan. We're in the Bronx, and the Mariners lead the Yankees 2-0. What a shot.
See you later.